Welcome back to another episode of Trailblazers on WDIY 88.1 FM, where we shine a spotlight on bold thinkers and fearless leaders shaping our region's future. I'm your host, Melody Bradford. Today's guest is someone who has helped write the modern story of Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, from serving as one of the youngest mayors in city history to guiding a post-industrial city into a new era of innovation and culture, and now playing a hands-on role in reshaping its skyline as a real estate developer. John Callahan is a trailblazer in every sense of the word. He's a husband, father, and now grandfather, a strategic thinker, a risk taker, and someone whose work in both public service and private development continues to leave a lasting imprint on the Lehigh Valley. Let's dive into his journey.
Hi, Melody. How are you?
Good, good. Thanks for joining us today.
That's a wonderful introduction. Thank you for that.
Thank you.
I'm sure I deserve it.
John, you started your political career at just 27 years old. What inspired you to get involved in public service at such a young age? Politics, even.
You know, it's funny. I struggled with the decision, you know, at being young, but it actually struggled more with the decision of being running for mayor than councilman. But I remember kind of sitting at the kitchen table and reading the morning call, and the story was about kind of how there was going to be two openings on city council. I had grew up in Bethlehem, but I just had moved back after a 4.5 year period of time living in Connecticut, New Jersey with my wife and I when we first got married. And so we moved back to Bethlehem when our child was born, our daughter. So there was this kind of relatively rare opportunity in Bethlehem history at that time, because many of the members had been on for like 30 years. They'd been on for a long time. And the story was kind of about how there was going to be a bit of a changing of the guard on council. There was going to be a new mayor. And I thought to myself, you know, I've moved back here now. I love this community. And I was really fortunate to grow up in Bethlehem. Teachers, the parents, the coaches, people in my life, I don't know that I would have been the person I was if not growing up in the neighborhood I grew up in. And I had this kind of sense of wanting to give something back to the community and participate now in its sort of future. So I was always a kid that ran for student government president. And I was like, you know, it wasn't the fear of running for something. That was sort of something that was kind of somewhat innate in me. But it was like, I said to my wife, I said, honey, there's a couple spots open on council. I think I'm going to run. And I kind of, you know, talked to family and friends about it, and I knocked a lot of doors, and I don't think a lot of people gave me much of an opportunity at that time or thought that I was going to get there. But I think I surprised some folks, and kind of off we went from there. But it really was about a desire to give back. And I felt like there were so many people in the community at that time that were sort of lamenting about what we were and what we had lost, instead of thinking about what we could be. And I felt like they needed a young voice on council that had a future, a vision for the future, and not looking back on the past.
I mean, so, you know, at 27, it's exciting to hear that, you know, you had the confidence to, when most people are just, you know, exploring what path they even want to take, let alone get into public service or politics. So it's incredible how early that calling came from you. Can you take us back to your earliest days on Bethlehem City Council, and what were some of the key lessons you learned in those early political years?
Well, there was sort of some factions on council when I got there, and you know, if you remember Bethlehem political history, Don Cunningham had just become mayor. Don Cunningham, and he was a 31-year-old mayor. So there were some folks on council like, well, what's with this Callahan? Who's he with? Like, what camp is he going to be in? That kind of sort of parlor intrigue. And I kind of wanted to be my own person and kind of let it play out and figure out sort of who did I align with over time. And it became pretty clear to me that Don had a vision for the future as well, and was thinking about the forward and not backward, and also trying to will stuff to happen. And there was an old guard on council at the time who either didn't think he was deserving of that role or was kind of wedded to the past. And so he and I kind of quickly gravitated together to sort of, let's get this done. So the thing I learned on council at the time was, you know, you've got to be your own person. Mm-hmm. You've got to vote your conscience. And there was a lot of times, you know, it's a 7-person member of council where it was a 6-1 vote, and then we'd all go for pizza afterward. And it was kind of uncomfortable for me as a 27-year-old hanging out with a lot of older guys as the guy that was sort of against, that was sort of the outlier there. But in the long run, I think that helped me kind of carve out who I was and what I believed in as a council person. I didn't necessarily, even if I knew the vote was not going to go my way, I wasn't going to just vote to go along, right? Mm-hmm. And so, then when the time came 6 years later to run for mayor, I had a pretty clear voting record that was distinctly different from some of the other members on council. And I could say, all right, this is what I believe in for the future. These things worked out pretty well for the community over the last 6 years. And so, and I have a vision that's very different than, you know, the other folks that might also be running. So it wasn't purposeful, but I was like, just having kind of that strength of your own convictions and voting your conscience, I think really was important for me early on as an elected official.
What did that teach you from a leadership perspective about old versus new? Like, certainly you must have looked at, you know, the fact that you were starting so young and then going into your mayoral time and even into now, like old versus new. A lot of times, you know, leaders may be reluctant to maybe take a chance on, you know, the younger generation and or find somebody that's willing to do that versus, well, I won't call them old, but maybe seasoned, you know.
Well, you know, as vintage, as I sit will. Before you, Melody, with a gray beard, I'm starting to feel a little vintage myself. So some of my biggest supporters as I went door to door were older people that were like, hey, these guys had their chance. We need some young blood. So I love that. Like these were people that were much older than me, but were willing to take a risk on, you know, a 27-year-old councilman or, a 33-year-old mayor. You know, like that was their mindset, was like, hey, we need young blood. So I don't want to come off as like, but also it's not necessarily about whether you're old or young. It's kind of what your outlook is. I don't want to, like, because we had plenty of folks on city council. You know, the one gentleman that I just have always appreciated, was a great mentor of mine, was Gordon Maurer. And he was an older gentleman, but he had been mayor, came on later as a councilman. And he still had a very sort of forward-thinking, optimistic view of the city and what it could become, despite, you know, him being, you know, 70, 80 years old. So it doesn't have to be what your age is. It's kind of more of old guard, new guard, in the sense of, like, what is your outlook on things? So so I kind of forgot what your question was, but I just wanted to make that point that it's, you know, like a lot of folks had the most confidence in me were older folks. And then I like to think that, you know, I still believe that the city's best days are ahead of it. I'm not one of these folks that sort of says, hey, you know, we did it this way back in the day. You know, we have to do it that way again. You know, when it was my time, I kind of believe, like, hey, I had my 10 years to do the best I could in the time that I was mayor. And, you know, let's leave it for somebody else to take the ball and run with it. So I want to now continue to play my role now on the real estate side to sort of do my part.
So the moral of the story is, if you want to be a leader or a trailblazer, you should absolutely have a vision and a plan to execute.
There you go.
And you did.
You said it better than I did.
You became mayor in 2004.
Yes.
One of the youngest in the city's history at the time. What was that moment like for you personally and professionally? That must have been exhilarating.
It was. Okay. It was very exhilarating. It was very exciting. It was daunting because if you think back again to kind of where the city was at that time, Bethlehem Steel had gone into bankruptcy and was sold out of bankruptcy in 2003. So, you know, originally Bethlehem Steel, the plan was that it would continue on as an entity, even if they were going to close the Bethlehem plant. And then it was decided that they went into bankruptcy. So this idea and all these sort of wonderful plans and pictures on the wall that they were, you know, that they had released in 1998 of what the steel plant was going to become, that was out the door. There wasn't even a Bethlehem Steel to talk to. And so we got bought by this, you know, International Steel Group that was headquartered in Cleveland, you know. So, like, there's this sort of patriarchal sort of, oh, we're going to take care of Bethlehem. And we were on our own as a community. Like, back in the day, if the city of Bethlehem couldn't make a payroll, they needed money, they went to Steel, and Steel sort of benevolently kind of, you know, helped the city out. So the training wheels were off, and we had this giant 1,800-acre Bethlehem Steel site that we had to kind of figure out what was going to happen with. So it was heady times, it was a little scary. And kind of what attracted me to the potential of being mayor at that time was that the decisions we made and what we did over these last 10 years, so say from 2004 to 2014, was going to really change the trajectory or set the trajectory of this community for, you know, decades to come, because it was this unique period of time or inflection point in the community where we went from being an old steel town to something new. And we hadn't yet figured out what that something new was going to be. And we had 20% of the taxable landmass of the city, a very large parcel of property in which to figure it out. And so, but getting new jobs to that area, building that tax base again, becoming what we were going to become was pivotal and really critical because, you know, what Bethlehem Steel did at that time is they went back and, you know, went from an operating steel mill to a brownfield site. So they went back to the county and reassessed all those properties downwards. So our tax base was in free fall. And so we didn't just lose the jobs and the folks that were impacted personally with pensions and healthcare and the just kind of the overall mindset of the community about you know where we were at that point. But like just from a purely financial standpoint, we were struggling to make you know our payroll and deliver the city services that we police, fire, EMS, all the things our parks, you know, just to kind of keep the city afloat was a day-to-day challenge. So it's like, we have to figure out how to deal with the here and now and keep the lights on. And then we've got to still figure out ways to grow and invest in ourselves for the future because that ultimately is going to determine, you know, our success or failure.
Yeah, absolutely. And when you were mayor, like you said, it was during a pivotal time for Bethlehem. What are you most proud of during your tenure in office?
I think in big picture, you know, broad terms, and I can get more specific, but obviously the Bethlehem Steel site really was the opportunity. It was like this enormous challenge and trying to figure out, you know, given the size of it, you know, how are we going to piece this together and figure out what it wanted to become. And so so overall, I'm certainly proud of you know, LVIP-7 and the Majestic site and, you know, doing the Route 412 enhancements that opened up kind of a new gateway into the city off of 78, managing that, you know, a large construction project like that. And then ultimately, you know, bringing the sands here. But the project I would say most specifically I'm most proud of has got to be Steel Stacks because it's just a complete one of a kind, never been done before, hasn't been done since. A very bold sort of vision for what we wanted to be and very challenging in many, many ways to execute and pull off. And so I'm really, really, really proud of that. And I think that most certainly goes down as kind of the thing I'm most proud of in my time in the city.
And that's only to talk about development, right?
Yeah.
I mean, because when I was over at PBS, we talked about what you did with the schools. Can you touch on that, the softer side of Mayor Callahan? You know, you went in and you were reading to children and the legacy that you left behind.
I mean, that's like...
That's the softer side of the mayor.
I have a soft spot that way. And that, I take that part kind of really personally. And that's, so I'm very proud to have been a member and part of a trustee for the School District Foundation. I was most recently the president of the foundation. And I really believe that one of the top five reasons why Bethlehem remained the community that it did, even despite sort of the losses that we sustained, is the school district and the quality of the school district. And so we really never lost our middle class as a community because of the strength of the public schools. And I'm a public school kid. My wife's a public school kid. My kids are public school kids. I really believe in education, public education, as a great equalizer. And so, I wouldn't be who I am without, you know, the teachers and the school district being involved in my life at an important early time. So, you know, I had a speech impediment growing up. I was not a kid that, you know, I showed up in kindergarten, I could barely talk. And I had, you know, fortunately had, you know, the school district had great speech therapy. And by second grade, I had kind of worked out my issues. And I had people that took a true interest in my life and wanting me to sort of do better, do well. So I want a kid showing up in kindergarten today perhaps a little behind and maybe not having all the tools that, you know, like I did to have the same opportunity. Cause I was not a kid that, you know, walked into kindergarten going, wow, this kid's going to be mayor someday. So, and so that's why I put so much sort of emphasis into education. Cause, and I want the kids in our community to know that they are loved, that they're seen and that, you know, people care about them. And even if they're going, so when I would meet with kids as mayor, cause they learn Bethlehem history, third or fourth grade, I can't remember now which grade it is, but they'll come in and I would always take time to meet with them as they're doing the historic Bethlehem tour. And I was very open about, like, you know, what it was like growing up when I was a kid and the challenges I had. Cause I remember meeting Mayor Marcinson when I was at Buchanan Elementary School. I was student government president. We had won an award for the Halloween parade. And he came in and gave me the award. And And I remember that very vividly as a kid. And so I think to myself, every time I'd walk in to meet with a group of kids, I'm like, who might be the next mayor in this classroom? You know, mm-hmm. who could I talk to maybe inspire a bit? So I took that very personally because it meant a lot to me growing up. But I have always recognized the incredible impact that the school district has had on our community and the partnership that has to exist between the city and the school district to continue to make this community what it is.
It's one of the top in the region, and yeah. It's a beautiful part of your legacy as mayor. Let's go back to the Bethlehem Sands Casino just for a sure. second. One of your major legacies is your work on the Bethlehem Sands Casino project. How do you reflect on that now with all the pros, cons, and controversies that came with it? I mean, I'm sure you ran into some few hurdles there.
Melody, we had meetings till 2-3 in the morning. So, it is not an easy thing to bring a gaming or a casino to a community that's as historic as Bethlehem is. And it was certainly challenging. But, you know, I tried to take a sort of practical approach to the issue in determining where I would fall, you know, as the mayor at that time. Obviously, the state of Pennsylvania had made gambling legal, and there was going to be a casino in the Lehigh Valley. I mean, we're the third largest area. We're very close to New Jersey. We're the fastest growing area. So the Lehigh Valley was going to get a casino, whether it was in Bethlehem or Allentown or some other location. So the question that I sort of thought about as I approached it, my philosophy was like, it wasn't so much a question of if, it was a question of where and how best to execute it. And so I felt like bringing the energy of gaming to South Bethlehem, to the Bethlehem plant, was going to be the catalyst to help us drive the overall redevelopment. Mm-hmm. And so that was my approach. And I thought to myself, if this is going to come to the Lehigh Valley, who do I trust more than Bethlehem and myself to make sure it's done well? And so that was kind of my approach. So I was an early advocate for gaming, but I then went about, you know, doing my research to understand, like, where are the communities that were introducing gaming was a success, and then where were the communities where it didn't do well? And we live not far from Atlantic City, so it's easy to see the ones where, you know, and others where it didn't work. And then, but then, you know, so the communities that did well seemed to make sure they had their infrastructure right prior to the gaming coming, right? And so, you know, making sure that our road network was appropriate, making sure we had the proper parking, make sure it was well planned and well designed. And, you know, so many casinos that you see kind of look like a spaceship that landed from some other planet. They don't really relate to anything else in the community that's around them. And so I didn't want that for our site. I wanted our site to be integrated, to sort of fit. And you can drive down 412 and I've had the experience where people just don't even know that the casino's there in some respects. And so, and that to me is I'm proud of that. I think it fits with the community and it works as an integrated, it's not.
If you need it, it's there.
Yeah, and it's not going to, I didn't want it to define who we were as a community. I wanted it to be kind of part of
the community.
What we were as a community. I wasn't naive enough to think that we were going to make this huge investment and this was going to happen. It was going to have an impact. Of course it was going to have an impact. And my job as mayor was to make sure it was well executed, to maximize the positive impacts and do our best to minimize the negative impacts and try to be the example for a future mayor and another community that's struggling with the idea of whether we should have gaming and go like, where do I now look to see where they did it best? And let's go look at Bethlehem because they were the community that got it right. And I feel
practice,
like we got it right.
Yeah.
And, you know, despite the controversy and the long meetings, one thing that I'm also kind of proud of, and I think it's a Bethlehem tradition, is we gave everybody an opportunity to be heard. If you were for it, if you were against it, if you were neutral, you know, I don't feel like we rammed this through. That's not going to work in Bethlehem. Like, there's too many people here that have a stake in their community. There's too many people that want to have a say. And I think part of in setting up a process for how to go about that was making sure that everyone had an opportunity for their voice to be heard, so that regardless of which direction it went in, like, that's how you build sustainability over time. Because I don't want people to check out and go, oh, you know, we have a casino. I'm not going to volunteer anymore at the school district. I'm not going to do this. I still live here. And now that it's coming, we have an obligation as a community to make it the best thing we can make it. And so, and I think that came along with making sure everybody could be heard. And I contrast that in some regard, because I would at times look over to Allentown where they'd have a public meeting and four people showed up and it's like they were done at 8 o'clock and I'm in the Brockle Middle School till 2 o'clock in the morning. And I thought to myself, geez, everything's going smoother over there. But I'd much rather live in a community that, you know, 400 people show up because they want their voice to be heard, but then a community that's kind of like, eh, whatever happens, happens, right?
Yeah.
So, and my job was to make sure that sort of we kept that energy, you know, even post-decision getting made so that, you know, I didn't want people to walk away at the end.
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, it's not only considering your neighbor, so to speak, but it's also kind of governing from a Commonwealth perspective.
Mm-hmm.
Hint, hint.
Yeah.
I knew I was going to get an answer from you from on that one. You had a strong emphasis on arts and culture. I mean, the Wind Creek is now Wind Creek. It used to be Sands, but that has an arts and culture center mm-hmm. within it. Why was supporting organizations like Arts Quest and Music Fest so important to your vision?
Well, listen, Arts Quest is an amazing organization.
Yes, it is.
Think about how Music Fest started, why it started. It was kind of to give the community a shot in the arm. What is it now? Are we 45 years into Music mm-hmm. Fest? Something like that. You know, when the community was having a series of layoffs. And it's just sort of grown and evolved into such a beautiful organization. And they're a great partner for the city. You know, there's always some controversy about not just about Music Fest, but kind of what is, you know, how much support should the city give Arts Quest or the public support? And I was always of the mindset, look, that if we didn't have something like Music Fest and an organization like Arts Quest in our community, we'd have to pay to build something. Like, what mayor wouldn't want that in their community doing wonderful things? So, you know, there's always going to be a push-pull there. There's going to be a little tension for some folks. But to me, music and visual arts and arts in general are what bring people together.
Mm-hmm.
And it's what makes life worth living, right? And so to have an organization like Arts Quest figuring that out on a year in and year out basis and trying to, you know, there's such an enormous economic engine for the community, not just in ticket sales, but like if we want to attract the, you know, keep our young people here and not have brain drain, and we want to attract the best and brightest from, you know, around the world or this country to come live in the Lehigh Valley, it's organizations like Arts Quest that attract those people and facilities like Steel Stacks. And so to me, it was kind of a no-brainer. And they've always, you know, going back to when, you know, Jeff Parks ran Arts Quest, and now with Cassie and her team, they understand not only the tremendous value and strength of the arts, and I'm proud to be a trustee on the Arts Quest Foundation now, but they also have a sense of kind of the bottom line of on the economics of it, because, you know, we invested huge amounts of money as a community in Steel Stacks, but you're only going to do that if you feel like the organization you're working with has an understanding of the economics and that this thing's going to be sustainable and work over time. And so they've been a great partner in providing, you know, programming for children that necessarily can't afford, you know, those types of programs, and
mm-hmm.
providing all that free music and free arts education and just being an organization that's really put the Lehigh Valley and Bethlehem in particular on the map. And so I can't say enough good things about Arts Quest and the job that they've done.
Yeah.
And the arts in general. I mean, we are very blessed in Bethlehem to have the Bach Choir and so many arts organizations that are doing really good work here in the city.
Well, and it speaks to the quality of life for the region, which, you know, you helped contribute quite a bit to. So that's an awesome part of your legacy as well. What was it like leading a city while you're also raising a family? And how did you stay grounded as a husband and father?
Well, my wife kept me grounded. I remember the first time, you know, early on, maybe the first week or so I was mayor, I came home and I started barking out orders. We need to do this. We got to do that. And my wife kind of said, ho, time out. You know, you might be mayor of the city, but you're not mayor of this house, right? So she and my kids have done a pretty good job keeping us grounded. You know, I realized early on that, listen, my kids are going to grow up whether I'm there or not, right? Mm-hmm. And so I had a wonderful administrative assistant, Louise, and we made a deal going in that, like, I'm gonna coach Little League, and I'm gonna do certain things with my boys and with my daughter that are, like, that's on the schedule, and that's kind of sacrosanct, that nothing touches that. And so, I remember sort of showing up at North Central Little League in a suit, changing in my car into my coaching gear, and then putting my suit back on and, you know, heading out to an evening of events. So it's a matter of just, you know, setting the right priorities and sticking to it. And at some point I would come home exhausted, but like, hey, you know, this is the job I signed up for, but I'm not going to sacrifice my family and my kids growing up to do it. So I'd be kind of a hypocrite spending a lot of time worrying about other people's kids and not focusing on my kids.
So. And I've actually seen you make those pivots from one event to the next. You know, like, yeah. I'll be like,
but
oh, where are you going?
I have I'm kind of high energy, and I kind of enjoy that aspect of life, and so. But, you know, I have a wonderful partner with my wife. She did a really, you know, she bore the brunt of raising the kids and kind of the day-to-day stuff. So to allow me to sort of do what my day job, but then I was not going to be an absentee dad at all. And being a granddad is just the greatest. Like, I have my grandson James is going to turn a year old in a week or so. And he has just been a great spark in our lives. And
that's awesome.
I got another grandson coming in October.
Oh,
so
boy.
It's a real blessing.
Looking back, what's one decision you made as mayor that felt personal but was necessary? In particular?
I go back to sort of the time I spent with elementary school kids and being involved in education. Because of my background and growing up the way I did, that was very personal to me. I wanted to always take the time to spend with kids so that they could understand that whatever they're going through in their lives right now, if they work hard and keep, you know, making good decisions, that things are going to work out, like, then not to get discouraged. That was a very personal message. I really did try to and make time to spend, because it does ground you, because you realize when you're with kids at that age in public schools that you think about how blessed you are to have the things you have and the things that your children have, and just keeping you centered. And not everybody is so lucky,
mm-hmm.
and that we need to be mindful of that and meet people kind of where they are.
Yeah. So, you know, you've worn many hats, mayor, councilman, now developer, you're in real estate development after politics. What has remained constant in your leadership philosophy through it all, do you think?
Geez, that's a good question. I've got a lot of sayings. You could just ask my kids. I'm always saying, you know what, my favorites are like, no, that we don't know you have so many. But one of the things as I talk to others about kind of leadership is I never would ask anyone to do something that I wouldn't do myself. You know, like I have this mindset of, like, there's no job too big and no job too small. Like, mm-hmm. and the mayor teaches you that, you know, you get involved in a lot of little things that in ways you can make people's lives better. And then you've got, you know, giant projects where you're trying to make some, you know, $1 billion project happen. So you have to sweat the details, but you have to do what's necessary in order to accomplish the goal. And sometimes it's a small thing and sometimes it's a big thing, but there's not a question of like, oh, this is beneath me or this is above me. Like, you gotta make it happen. I would never ask anyone to do anything I wouldn't do myself.
Great advice. Last question. When you're walking through Bethlehem now, a place that you've helped reshape, what goes through your mind?
I had this experience a couple of weeks ago. I was at a Levitt show. And my wife was out of town for work, and I don't go to the Levitt as much as I should. Like, I really love that spot. It's one of my favorite places. And I remember it was a beautiful summer night, and it was a great band. And just kind of looking up at the blast furnaces all lit up. And so when I ran for mayor, and I gave up a pretty good career with Pfizer Pharmaceuticals and a good salary, and it was certainly a step back for me financially, but I was doing what I loved. I was doing what I had real passion for. And that would be my best advice to anybody, is do what you love. Mm-hmm. I say that to kids all the time that are, you know, I say, because A, you're going to be happy because you're doing what you like to do, what you love to do. You do it for free, right? And in essence, if you love it. Number two is eventually you're going to get good at it, because if you love it, you're going to keep doing it and get good at it. And then eventually someone's going to pay you to do it. Now, it may not be a lot of money, but you're going to be happy doing what you love, mm-hmm. good at what you do, and hopefully gainfully employed in it. And that's a bit better than 90% of the people in the world have. So I was following that path then, and I did it with the idea that someday I'm going to be able to drive around with my grandkids, and fortunately it's coming sooner than later, and kind of point to a couple of things here or there that their granddad had a role in. And not that I did it myself. I understand that there's so many people that can claim credit for these things, but that I led a life that had an impact and had some meaning. And then, so that was one of those moments for me a couple of weeks ago at the Levitt, because I was by myself and I had a chance to kind of reflect on it all and imagine that place might not be there if we hadn't worked together as a community and make some important calculated risks to make some investments in our future. And it certainly paid off.
Yeah, and we're grateful for your service.
Thanks,
both publicly as
I'm
well
not
as
done
now
yet.
Privately.
We're not done
That's
yet.
Right. John Callahan's story reminds us that leadership is never one chapter. It's a lifelong series of decisions and pivots and acts of courage, from leading a city through economic transformation to reimagining its future one development at a time. His commitment to purpose and place is undeniable. John, thanks so much for your service, your continued contributions to the Lehigh Valley, and for joining us today on Trailblazers.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.